This class was recorded in June 2015 at Herbstock, Boston's homegrown herbal conference. The presenters are Katja Swift and Rin Madura, and the topic is Herbalism as Street Medicine. For more information about our school and clinic, please visit our website at commonwealthherbs.com.
Herbstock has copies of this handout, as well as some YouTube videos that are kind of useful. So they're not ones that we recorded ourselves, although maybe at some point we'll get that far. But they're just handy that would be useful as reference for some different techniques. So you can check that out. And so what we're going to do is talk a little bit about street medicine and what it is, how it's a little different, and we're going to open up our kits for you guys and show you what we carry with us all the time. And then we're going to talk specifically about the herbs that we think you can't leave home without. Now, in this list of herbs, some of my very favorites didn't make the cut. The reason that this list of herbs is what it is because we were going for the broadest number of uses with the smallest number of items, because weight is a consideration. You know, you're carrying all this with you and you don't have like a wagon to pull behind you. So at that point, sometimes you need to like make some decisions about who's gonna come with you. So we will talk about through going through the herbs, we'll talk about the specific things that you might be working with on the street. Sound good? Let's do it. So when we talk about street medicine, there's kind of two branches of street medicine, and it's useful to know about like all the places where this is really applicable. So one we could classify as citizen emergency support, right? Lots of street medics and lots of people who medic in the streets have some sort of training. But not everybody, right? If you can put a Band-Aid on and help somebody wash out a wound and help them calm down and not panic, you're already useful, right? If that's all you know, awesome. So in emergency, when we're talking about citizen emergency support, this would be in the case of demonstrations. I don't know if you guys know, but in a demonstration, in a protest, paramedics are not permitted to help the people who are protesting if the situation has been declared unsafe by the police. So if the police have made a line and some guy tries to cross it or some woman tries to cross it and they crack him over the head with a nightclub, the paramedics aren't allowed, even if he's in the street bleeding from his head, they're not allowed to help that person because the situation has been declared unsafe and the paramedics are not allowed to cross the line. Okay? So, in Selma, Alabama, back in the 60s, a bunch of med students decided that wasn't very cool, and they decided to start marching with the protesters so that the protesters would have their own medical personnel with them. And to this day, that still happens, and those people are referred to as street medics, and they bring their own kits. They do not bring any licenses, no uniforms. The closest thing to a uniform is some red duct tape. You know,
and we got cute little armbands and
these sometimes, right? There is some training for that, but again, just going around in your normal daily life, if you can put on a Band-Aid and help somebody stay calm, you're still useful. So in cases of demonstration, in any kind of less organized unrest, but also in natural disasters, right? When we get Hurricane Sandy, right? If it had been 5 hours difference, Hurricane Sandy would have hit Boston. So we got lucky that time, but it's coming, right? And when that happens, we don't have enough paramedics. We don't have enough doctors. We don't have enough emergency room beds to take care of what's going to happen, right? So any kind of first aid training that you have is going to be useful in that sort of a situation. But also an accident. If you're in the T, have you ever noticed? There's no first aid kits in the T. Right? Nowhere. There may be some locked somewhere, but is the person who needs the Band-Aid going to be able to get it from whatever door it's locked behind? Maybe not. And if there's a subway accident, how long is it going to take the first responders to get there and actually get to you? Yes, they practice that, but subway accidents are not fun. They're not super common, but they're not fun, and it's going to be a lot better if you've got stuff with you to help out.
And they were pretty common this winter.
Yeah. So then the second area of street medicine is what I would refer to as citizen community support, right? So this would be natural disasters where it's a long term, you know, it's not the initial, the very first minute of the earthquake. It is the weeks afterwards where people can't get their blood pressure meds, people can't get their metformin, their type 2 diabetes meds, and we need community support. Or even just now we have some wounds and we need long-term care for a large wound that maybe couldn't get stitched because there wasn't enough emergency services to take care of that. So that sort of long-term support after a natural disaster. Also encampments. So if you're familiar with the Mountain Justice encampments, where in West Virginia and throughout the coal areas in the Appalachians, they are camping out so that people can't blow the tops off of mountains to get the coal out, or there are people camping out in places where they want to put the pipeline for the tar sands oil. And so that's a long-term encampment, and the type of needs that those people would have would be different. That's community health at that point. They're not necessarily going to have giant wounds, but there might be head lice that goes through the camp, right? There's probably going to be athlete's foot going through the camp, and there's probably going to be diarrhea and stuff like that also. So having some skills for that, there's never enough medical staff for those sorts of things. So having skills for that thing will help. But also, if you're going to work with homeless populations, right?
I've been homeless.
Then working with that type of a population, again, you're going to need some street medicine. And they don't have access, despite that supposedly we all have health insurance now, they don't have access to medical care that everybody, or that many people would take for granted. So being able to provide care there, but also just being neighborly, right? When I was a kid, the old people in the neighborhood, we all took care of them. We looked after them. And now, elderly people in the neighborhood, nobody really, who looks in on them, right? We don't have tight-knit communities. In many of you, especially if you live right here in town, you might live in a three-person apartment and not know the other people in your own little three-apartment building, right? That's really common in this town. So just being able to look after our neighbors and look after the people in our community who need extra support, especially in any cases of disaster, there's not going to be enough. Right? And this even could just be for self-sufficiency. Even if you're like, well, I don't know if I can take care of somebody else, but I'd like to be able to take care of myself. Because sometimes, you guys, that radicchio can get really unruly. You just have to say. There was a very large serrated knife involved.
She still has most of the thumb under there.
It is most, yeah. And so just being able to take care of yourself is also a really big deal. A lot of people would just go to the emergency room if they get any kind of, you know, like, slicing or whatever, and they've sliced off a large chunk of, but you don't necessarily have to. You know, if you've got some skills, a lot of times you can take care of that stuff yourself. Okay, so great. So these are the types of situations where we're gonna need these skills. So let's talk about what we got here. First off, water is always really useful. If you can carry water, no matter what sort of situation you're in, dehydration is dangerous, right? If you can keep people around you, keep yourself and keep people around you from getting dehydrated, you win. You already win. So these kits, this is my street kit. When I'm at a protest or a demonstration or If I'm specifically going out to work with homeless populations or with whatever else, this is my kit that I take with me in the street. And there are things in this kit that I don't carry with me necessarily every day. This is my everyday kit, and we'll go through this one as well, and that's his everyday kit. And even my 12-year-old daughter carries an everyday kit. So we'll just go through them and let you see what we carry around with us every day. You might not feel that you need everything that we carry, but making some decisions about what you want to have with you all the time and what you want to have with you if you know that you're going out to a demonstration or a encampment or whatever is really useful. So I have two bags here of herbs, and we're going to talk about those last. I carry in my street kit, I carry a Sam Splint, which is the best $10 ever. You can use cardboard to split stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, there's everything right with that. And if you are out in the street, you know, this is only going to be good for one person. So you're going to need to know how to scavenge materials to do what you got to do. But with almost no preparation at all, presto, a splint for an arm, right? But this thing is infinitely conformable. You can splint almost anything with a Sam splint. So they are really handy, and they're not terribly costly. So it can be really useful. Obviously, it's a one-time. It is reusable, but if your person is then going to go to take it with them, you're not going to necessarily get it back. But if it's a family member or whatever, you get it back. So it is very handy. But you always can just get cardboard out of the recycling, right? And always thinking about how you can do all this stuff without the supplies is also really, really handy. So,
do you have to cover it in plastic to be able to use it as a splint, or does it?
No, you can use any cardboard. I mean, preferably not a dirty pizza box, but I would use that before I would use nothing.
Okay.
You know?
How do you know when you need to split?
So, okay, we will probably, if something is broken or sprained,
yeah,
then you would splint it.
Mm-hmm.
If they think it's broken or sprained and you're not really sure, splint it,
yeah,
right? If they're worried, if there's any kind of injury that causes fear of jostling, like for whatever reason, this would be very, very painful, even just because maybe there's a laceration that goes like this and you don't want to have that bend. You can't hurt somebody by splinting them,
yeah,
right? It's a short-term thing.
And how would you attach it to the splint?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
So, if you didn't...
Where do you get those?
Oh, yes. Get them online. Medical supplies are a racket. If you go to CVS, it costs, for one of these guys, it costs $2.50.
Yeah, it does.
What?
Mm-hmm.
But you can get a box of 24 of them for $5 on Amazon. So, yes, Amazon, Ultra Retailer, all that kind of stuff.
Even.
But CVS is just as bad, so save your dollars. So to attach a splint, you can use, if you want to be real fancy, some self-occlusive wrap. This stuff it clings to itself. It's really, really handy. I love it. But it does cost dollars. I think they're maybe a dollar each. 50 cents each. I got a box of 24 for $12. 50 cents each. And so obviously you're gonna run out of these at some point, but they are super handy. They stick only to themselves. So if you've wrapped something up in gauze or whatever else, you can easily wrap around with this. And also they keep things very clean, right? They do have a little bit of water resistance. And so it's not gonna keep something completely dry, but it is water resistant. So if somebody has a big burn and a big bandage over that, you can then cover it with this and it's gonna make it a lot sturdier.
They also come in different colors.
They do, yes, all kinds of colors, but these are latex free.
Aww.
So the colored ones have latex. And that's not a problem if your person doesn't have a latex allergy. But the skin color ones are latex free. Or you could also just attach it with strips of cloth, with a bandana, with a scarf. Carefully with rubber bands, yeah. With a belt, with t-shirts that have been chopped up, you know, absolutely, or not chopped up, just whatever way. So the other things that I like to carry are a selection of roller gauze. I gotta tell you guys, roller gauze is so useful. You can do anything with roller gauze. So I have a selection of these guys, which you just roll around. And I said that there were some YouTube videos online. It is very handy to be able to wrap a neat bandage with no wrinkles, nice and neat, good and tidy. The nicer your bandage wrapping skills, the sturdier the bandage is, the more stress it can stand up to. And in an emergency situation, you don't know if that bandage is going to have to last for 3 days, right? You don't know when the next time is that that person's going to have attention. So you want to bandage a really good bandage, and it's worth practicing. So buy yourself some that you just use for practice and that you roll back up again afterwards, and then you practice again and roll it back up again afterwards. And those YouTube videos that we link to show you how to bandage. There's a zillion of them out there. Some of them are crappy, some of them are great. But there was two that I liked. One of them is long and goes through all the different types of bandaging, and one of them is specifically about a compression bandage so that you can stop bleeding. It's really good. So having a bunch of different sizes of roller bandages is very handy. Having,
And you're seeing here, we've got bags inside of bags inside of bags. Very, very handy, right? And I would even say if you have the option, it's better if you can get the 2 or 3 mil plastic bags with the zippers on them, because that's a lot easier to fiddle around with, especially if your hands are wet or blood is around or anything else like that might be going on. It's a lot easier than trying to squeeze one of these where they have to click together, right? So if you can get those bags, they're a lot better to use.
And you don't know if it's going to be raining, and then you're going to put your kit down and open it up, and as soon as you do that, all the Band-Aids get wet, right? So keeping stuff, and then having them organized by what it is in the bag. So this is my bag of square stuff, right? These are various sizes of gauze, some sterile, some not. So this is just for soaking up blood, or for once I've gotten something good and clean, for then laying that over like a giant Band-Aid and putting the roller gauze around it. Right. So having a nice supply of those is good. Having a couple of triangle bandages is quite handy because you can use these for anything. You can splint with them, you can turn them into a pressure bandage, you can turn them into a long strip of bandage, just depending on how you fold it. And those are very, very handy. In the videos, it does show several different methods of folding so that you can use a triangle bandage for different things. I know it looks like a square right now, but if you unfold it, it actually is a giant triangle, right? Like a scarf. So then I have a couple different kinds of tape. And tape is never perfect. I have paper tape, cloth tape, and plastic tape. And they're never exactly what you want. But the three different kinds of tape do function a little bit differently, and I would say the best way to decide what kind you want is to get one of each and then test them out for yourself. There's a million preferences about why you would use one or the other, but it is not rocket science. It is just personal preference. Do you like the type of adhesive? Do you want it to breathe? Do you whatever? So the real only way to decide is play with it yourself and see what you like best, your own self.
Would you recommend duct tape in any sort of, like...
If I didn't have something better, yes.
Okay.
The reason that I would not use duct tape is that it's quite aggressive adhesive. And if you're going to take that off and have to peel it, then you may risk opening the wound a little bit. But I would use it before I would use nothing. And if I was worried about that, I would try to set it up in a situation where I had a cut space so that I didn't have to peel. And then one thing that you can never be without is a bag of gloves, right? Always have gloves. If it's your own family member.
I have them in a bunch of places. Like, I have some.
Yeah, they're everywhere. If it's your own family member, well, fine, you know, whatever. But if you're in the tea, it doesn't matter if that fellow is wearing a nice suit and looks real fancy. You don't know. You don't know. So always have gloves available. Plus, right now, if I didn't have gloves, I wouldn't be able to practice on somebody else, because I'm a contaminant right now. I'm a threat to them. So by being able to put gloves on over my bandage, that makes me safe to work with somebody else as well. So that actual contamination issue goes in both directions. Plus, Even if you're just in a situation where you haven't been able to wash your hands in a while, like instantly you have clean hands, right?
So that's really good.
A nice extra thing to have around, it is very handy to have some Tegaderm. Tegaderm is a very sort of fancy kind of bandage that's good if you're gonna need to have something bandaged for a long period of time.
Yeah.
It is very breathable, especially if there's a burn or something in there, and they're large. They have adhesive around the outside, but the middle won't stick to whatever nasty thing is under there.
What is that called?
Tegaderm, Tegaderm. And they are expensive. I only carry a couple of them. But in the situation that you need them, they are useful. You don't need a lot. And I carry some Steri-Strips. We don't, for lack of a better term, we don't believe in stitches. Right? You will see classes that are like, come learn how to set stitches in ham or on an orange or whatever. Here's the problem with stitches. If you're not in a sterile environment, you're stitching stuff into the wound. So instead of stitching someone, plus, if your stitches suck, they're gonna have a nasty, like everything, it's just all gonna be gross, right? So instead of stitching, what we do is we clean that wound really well. We will pack it in with whatever is appropriate, and we'll talk about that then when we get to herbs. And then we will either use Steri-Strips, which are very strong adhesive, and you sort of stick it to one side and you it over and push it in, and it's like an adhesive clamp almost to hold the things together. The other, they're expensive. I only carry one set or two sets, that's it. The other thing that you can use that costs much less is a compression bandage. So knowing how to do a good compression bandage is super, super useful, which is why there's one video that is just compression bandage on that thing. And one of our teachers, Sam Kaufman, who, this is a really great time to say, will be here from July 27 until August 5th doing a very special Wilderness First Aid certification class. There are 3 spots left. It's $800. It's 9 to 5 from July 27 to August 5th. We tried to keep the cost as low as possible. I know that's a chunk of money. But if you are interested in it, there are 3 spots open. So talk to us right away if you want one. Sam is amazing, and this particular class is going to be Wilderness First Aid certification with herbal medicines and with an urban component, because we live in Boston, right? The likelihood is we're going to need our Wilderness First Aid training here in the city. So we're going to be doing scenarios both at the Arboretum and in the streets so that we have training for both types of situations. And Sam always teaches that there is no higher definitive care. Even if all you're doing is giving somebody a Band-Aid, always assume that you're it, that there's nobody else available to help that person, because you don't know. You don't know if that person is going to decline further care. You don't know if we're in an emergency situation and there isn't going to be any other care for that person. So you always want to feel that whatever you feel comfortable in your scope of practice to do, that you do it to the level of, hey, all I got here is a Band-Aid and some green salve, but it's gonna be the best damn Band-Aid and green salve ever, and if this person doesn't see anybody else, I have at least nailed it with this Band-Aid and green salve, right? So, but Sam has had experience. He used to be a medic in the Green Beret, in the Special Forces. He's had experience multiple times with a wound that would have had stitches. Just using herbs and a compression bandage and giving it good nursing care and having it heal with no scar. So it is totally possible. Do not get intimidated by stitches. You really could be doing more harm with them. So, and then of course the last thing is some Band-Aids. Always have some Band-Aids. Great. Okay, so then, and our daily kits are really just scaled down versions of that. We have a small baggie of roller things and a small baggie of square things, right? The same stuff. I have a small baggie of, in this I only have one kind of tape, my favorite, which is actually the paper tape. And the one self-occlusive and a couple of triangles. That's all I need for every day. I do have a couple of Tegaderm for just in case. And obviously, Band-Aids and gloves. But for everyday sorts of situations, that's enough. Okay, and there's some herbs in there too, but we're going to do the herbs all together. So then there are the next category in here is handy tools. So we do have in the handout an actual list of the different types of bandages that you might want to carry. Also a list of handy tools. So some these can be real handy. One is a really good pair of tweezers that you feel comfortable using, right? That you can use to draw splinters or whatever else you might need to do, but a really good pair. A pair of trauma shears is also really useful. So trauma shears are scissors, but they have a special...
They have a rounded tip on the edge, so you can't actually cut somebody while you're trying to get
there
it under.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
So see, like, there's no damage here. If I was trying to cut somebody's pants off or their... This just turned into a whole different class. Or whatever, I'm not going to hurt them because there's a blunt edge here that also raises it up off the skin. But also, I can cut somebody's bandage off with that, right? In general, we would prefer not to cut someone's clothing if that's possible, right? In an emergency room, they don't think about that kind of stuff. They just, there's like, get it off as fast as possible. And there's something to be said for that. But when we're talking about street medicine, we don't know if that person has other clothes available. What if this is their only clothing? And now we're just gonna, without thinking about it, cut right straight up. There are a few situations where that's gonna be necessary. But unless it's really necessary, we do try not to just rip up somebody's clothes because they might need those. It is real handy if you have the space to carry sewing supplies for exactly that reason. Because if you did have to cut somebody's stuff, you can sew it back together again and be like, well, at least you still have a pair of pants. It's not, you know, how they were, but they're on your body. So a pair of trauma shears are useful. I carry two. I carry trauma shears and I carry regular scissors as well. I think you do that as well. But having one or the other at least. A good knife is really, really useful. And actually my favorite knife is just a standard issue EMT knife that has a seatbelt cutter on it. And it also has a window glass breaker. This is my favorite knife for pretty much everything. It has a locking blade. This is also my, actually this one, it's a Cricut. It has a dual locking blade.
How much was it again?
$20 maybe.
Oh, that's
yeah. This one I particularly like just as a woman in a city because it's very easy to hold and that window breaker tip is would do a lot of damage, right? So if I'm just walking down the street at night and I'm feeling a little nervous in my environment, there's also this, right? So I don't, that just got on the recording. please do not do violence to anyone, but before they do violence to you, right? It's good stuff. So, but it can be really useful, and you can use the seatbelt cutter even without opening the blade. It's just right there and available, so if somebody's like all hung up in there, whatever, you can.
Is there a name?
This is a Cricut, which is CRKT. It is the M1613ZE, and it is that one because I have small hands. So they make much larger ones, and a lot of people look at my knife and they're, well, small knife, yeah. Well, you know, it's not the size of your blade that matters. For me, it is that if the blade is too large or if the handle is too large, it's not effective for me. So this is the blade that is appropriate for my size hand. I think it is the smallest one they make. CRKT.
Some of your knife choice is also going to be about where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing. This particular knife could be more useful in an encampment situation, especially if there weren't a lot of amenities around. And the major reason is... Can I?
It twists.
Oh, does it? Yeah. Is because this has a fire steel in it. And I can carry that all together as one thing, right? So that's pretty handy.
And that is a Light My Fire, is the brand. And it's a fire blade, I believe.
Yeah, it's Swedish because they have to deal
they
with
rock.
That kind of thing a lot in Sweden,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
It's an extremely good knife. So we all have one of those as well. And then also thinking about where you're going, if you have to get on an airplane, well, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with just, you know, a knockoff Swiss Army. Just, you know, if you're going somewhere, just stop in a Walmart, whatever, like in somewhere and get yourself a little $5 Swiss Army knockoff. It is good. It's fine.
Have you ever had trouble in the airport?
Scissors, I have at one point, let me show you the ones that, this is the second time I've had this pair of scissors, because they're dangerous, but these got taken away from me in Canada at one point. Yeah, I felt so betrayed. So you do have to be thoughtful about whatever's in even the kit you're going to carry on your person. Certainly when we're talking about tinctures, you know, you're going to want to have that as a separate module that you can just pull out and have them inspect or whatever. But you know, nowadays when we travel, we're going to check a bag. It's going to have knives and sharp things and fire and whatever else that I want to carry around. Yeah.
I will also say that if you are traveling intentionally for the purpose of participating in a demonstration as a medic, you should drive. Because you are likely to have your entire kit confiscated because they don't want medics. Right?
This happened to somebody when we went to the...
This happened multiple times.
But we were at the People's Climate March in New York last year. We went down to work with the medics there, and one guy was traveling from a little further out, but he got stopped at the airport. They took his whole kit and said, good day to you. So
yeah.
That was disappointing.
And in Ferguson, so we worked as support for Ferguson, and actually kits were being stolen out of cars in such a way that made it seem apparent that it was police officers taking them out of cars.
It is a thing.
So if you're traveling with a kit specifically for the purpose of going to a demonstration, don't fly. All right, it's also handy to have a needle or a pin or several, because sometimes you need to dig around in there, you know? Like, if there's bits of gravel and stuff, like, you do need to get that out. It's not fun. And it turns your stomach, and it hurts their hand, and it hurts you, or whatever wherever it happens to be. You just have to do it. You got to get that stuff out. You can't leave it in there.
Pulling splinters out too. You need a needle for this a lot of times.
A method of irrigation, whether that is a squirt bottle, which we realized we left at home this morning, but just a regular squirt top squirt bottle is what we use, or a spray bottle. You can get a fancy irrigation syringe if you want to. And actually, recently there was one incident where I was like, kind of need more pressure than I've got right now, but that's only ever happened once. So you can get an irrigation syringe if you want to. It just puts more pressure behind the water so that you can use that pressure to clean stuff out. But we use sports bottles and it's fine. Just squirt through the squirty top. It's good. Extra plastic bands or extra plastic bags are useful because you don't know if you need to throw something away. In general, if you do need to throw something away and it's an emergency situation, do not throw it in the trash because you don't know who might be eating out of the trash. And if you're going to throw a biohazard somewhere, don't put it in the trash. So instead what we do is if you have a biohazard, put it in one hand, take your glove off over it, take the other glove off and throw it in the street because everybody knows what gloves look like and they're not going to touch them because everybody knows that's medical waste. So that's way safer than putting it in the trash can. Like we're all so programmed to be like, put litter in its place. But remembering that there are people who use that as a source of food and having biohazard on that is not what we want. And ponytail holders, right? Like even if you don't have a lot of hair, endlessly useful. I cannot tell you guys, ponytail holders. Just have some with you.
You don't seem to have any today.
No, I have tons and all my...
They're just not on your head.
They're just not on my head, yeah. And then the other thing I would say, yeah.
Could you explain some of the ways that they're useful?
Ponytail holders? I have totally used them to hold splints on. I've like chained them together to hold bigger things. But even just like, I stupidly didn't get any tape out and I just wrapped this and the person isn't really confident enough that they're gonna, like they're just not with it enough that I can just get them to hold it well. I just press a ponytail holder on it while I go and like get something out. Anything, or even just like, I'm gonna give you this packet of 6 Band-Aids. Put a ponytail holder around it. Just, you know, like, whatever, any reason at all. There's a million. and a knit comb. A good quality steel knit comb. Because if you're in a long-term unsanitary environment, there's gonna be lice, and it's really no fun to shave everybody's head, and plus you may not have the ability to do that anyway. You may not have clippers and all that stuff. It's they're this big, they don't take up any space. This one doesn't take up any space because, oh, no, no, that's trauma shears, because it's actually not in here. So I'm not sure where it is, and I should probably figure that out. But they are, they take no space at all. They don't weigh anything. And having it is going to make a huge difference if you're in a long-term situation. Okay, so that's all the sexy stuff, right? All the bandages and all the, oh, they're bleeding, and whatever. And I would definitely recommend that you get yourself some first aid classes. I would also recommend that you don't take them from the conventional sources of first aid training. That's better than nothing, but they're always gonna teach stabilize and transport. And we're getting ready for not having anybody to transport to. So, just a second, there's nothing wrong with stabilize and transport. Obviously, if you have access to an emergency room, that is the best option. But you don't always have that access. So it's really good to get some training from the perspective of there's nothing else available, if you can do that. Okay, you had?
Yes, where would you suggest getting that training done?
Commonwealthers.com. So the big wilderness first aid training is like a huge thing, but we also do like Wednesday night training classes, and we probably should put some more first aid stuff on there now.
We will, especially after that program runs. We'll do some more regular work with that.
Okay, you then you?
In the case of where you do have a place you can transport, do you pretty much always transport, or are there, like, I mean, obviously,
I have never transported. Wow. You have.
Yeah. It depends on the severity. It depends on the person's wishes, you know? So a lot of that you're going to have to figure out in that moment.
No.
Yeah.
Do you never carry Narcan?
I am not currently Narcan trained, but I will be very soon. And then I will, yes.
This is an opiate antagonist. It's for when people have overdosed.
To Cambridge Cares About AIDS and get Narcan trained for free, and I've signed up a couple of times and haven't done it yet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, also the City of Boston does, every month they do two or three different Narcan trainings, and they're also free.
And I think there's a Cambridge Needle Exchange to check out too. Oh, it's a
yeah. Thank you for saying that, because I didn't put that in the handout and should have. Yes.
I was also wondering about LAW, liquid antacid.
Yes,
and water.
That's on the next part of the. So thank you for that segue.
Spoiler.
Yes. No, that's fantastic. Okay, so now let's talk about the real fun stuff, which is all the herbs. Oh, okay. Yes.
Do you have a handout?
We do. It's on the. All the handouts are on the website.
Oh.
Either our website or the Herbstock website. And everybody knows it's Marshmallow 2015 is the password that you go in to get all of the handouts from everybody's classes, right? So even like if you didn't come to our history class yesterday, but you are interested in it, all of everything is there, right? Okay, so let's talk about some plants. So you're gonna need some stuff. And I try to get this down to the very least. Now in my daily kit right now, the absolute bottom line, I won't go without this, is only two things, right? So this is Honey Gardens, they're in Vermont, propolis spray.
If you have the fortitude to make your own propolis spray, then I salute you.
How do you spell
propolis? P-R-O-P-R-O, no, that was wrong.
Propolis.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There was too many R's in there. Sorry. I was like getting in the rhythm of it. Propolis is hard to get into a spray, but Honey Gardens is awesome. So this is a small farm in Vermont, and they make, they also make an elderberry syrup and a wild cherry syrup and like maybe one or two other things. They're fantastic people. You can get this on Amazon fairly reliably, but in other places it can be hard to track down. So, sorry to do Amazon twice. Do they carry it all the time?
Cambridge Naturals. Of course,
good point.
That's a whole other thing. But yes. But the ingredients here are propolis, usnea, licorice root, raw honey, and alcohol. So already this stuff is useful for a lot of stuff. We have respiratory problems. We have sore throat. We also have disinfection of wounds, even though it will sting. And in general, I would prefer not to use alcohol if possible, because alcohol will slow down cell growth. I would prefer to have a clean wound than nothing. So I will use this if I don't have good water. But also really good for fungus stuff. So athlete's foot, trench foot, any of that kind of stuff. Or in any other location, any kind of fungal thing. I could probably come up with a bunch more things. And actually, in the handout, everything has a description of all the things that we would use it for. So the other one single thing that I cannot live without is pine resin salve.
Wow.
So this is olive oil that has calendula and plantain infused in it. And then you go and get the pine resin, just climb up a pine tree, and there'll be the big glops of resin, or sometimes you'll see it even on the ground where they've fallen off. It doesn't matter if there's dirt in it. That's okay, you can strain that out. So you just get yourself a bunch of big glops of pine resin, melt it into that olive oil that already has calendula and plantain, and strain the dirt out, and then make that into salve with your beeswax, right? This will fix everything. It's amazing, and also will give you ponies. So make sure,
what?
Ponies.
Okay.
And a pony?
Yes.
No. Thank you guys. Is there anything else you want? A pony?
No.
A pony. Really great for disinfecting wounds, really great for burns. We just did.
If I had already made it.
This one a friend of mine did make, and I like the tin, but no, we make it ourselves. In fact,
right here today, actually, I know that Vincent from the Bauer Studio has a pine salve. So if you're looking to walk home with one, then that's at least one place right here where you could get one today.
And Vincent is the one with the beautiful drawings and all the cool soap and whatever. So we just recently, I guess 2 weekends ago, I worked with a woman who had really 2.5 degree burns all over this part of her hand. And they were blistered up the size of marbles. And all I used was honey and lavender and pine pitch salve. And within 24 hours, all the blisters were gone. And now she does still have it covered, but she's growing new skin. And it's been 1 week or 2 weeks? It's been 2 weeks.
I don't even know. One or 2 weeks.
1 or 2 weeks.
Not very long.
She's keeping it covered because she's a farmer. So obviously, like, not getting dirt in there. But she has new skin, and, like, all of the skin was charred. It was...
She was here, but she left.
Oh, she left. Okay, I was like, wait a second. I saw her walk in here. She could just show us. So pine pitch salve, really, for everything. It is really, really amazing. And, again, this is even stuff you can use on athlete's foot. So, like, the full range of all the things. Wounds heal so fast with this. It's just calendula, plantain, pine pitch, you're done. Supposed to say pine resin because that's the technical term. Okay, so for me, if I had nothing else but those two things.
For you, you need one more thing.
That's right.
And I've got that right here.
Yes. Okay, so the other one more thing that I need, which we're going to talk about in just, what we're going to talk about now, is Lobelia. And I need that because I have an anaphylactic allergy of all things to marijuana. So if somebody is walking down the street having a nice, enjoyable smoke, I'm having an anaphylactic attack. And that is really a big old bummer. She's an herbalist. She's not that kind of herbalist. And so I carried an EpiPen for a long time, and then I had a baby. And I said, oh, crap. I don't want to have an EpiPen in my house with a baby, because what if, you know, like, whatever. And I'm sure they have safety things for that, but I just was freaked out about it. So So when my daughter Amber was born 12 years ago, I was like, wait a minute, I'm an herbalist. There's got to be something, right? And lobelia is the something, without fail. I go into anaphylaxis multiple times a month. Sometimes of the year, it can
not very far into it.
It can be multiple times a week. And lobelia is amazing, right? So I just take some right when I very first feel the thing starting to happen in the back of the throat, just immediately the lobelia, no problem. And it will stop it at whatever point I start at.
What's your dosage when you take it?
So, was that your question too?
Is it a tincture?
This is a tincture, yep, in alcohol. Lobelia is a low-dose plant. Typically, people say to start with 1 to 3 drops. I use a half a dropper full. Part of that is because my body is one of, like, I'm a tank. So I always use high doses of nearly everything. And that was true even when I was young and I used pharmaceuticals. I was the one who used 8 ibuprofen, not 1, you know. So first off, your mileage may vary based on your body. But if you're going to use it for anaphylaxis, go ahead and use a lot of it. The worst that can happen is the person will vomit, and that's actually a benefit. Right? So that's why lobelia is a low dose, is because if you take a lot of it, you'll induce vomiting. But this is exactly the reason that lobelia is safe to use for anaphylaxis or severe asthma attacks as well. Because the body prioritizes vomiting above anaphylaxis and above an asthma attack. So if you have to vomit, your body will open the pathway and then you'll puke. And when you're done, your body does not return you to your regularly scheduled that's not what happens, right? So it's not super fun to puke. But it's way funner to puke than it is to die. So I do not go anywhere without lobelia. Yeah.
Is that good for just respiratory allergies or allergies in general?
Yes. So lobelia does have a much wider range of uses. You can use it as a muscle relaxant anywhere on the body, actually, topically. You can use it just for regular allergies. Anytime that you need the bronchodilator effect. It's not like, oh, this is hay fever. I'm not going to bronchodilate your hay fever. No, it does for all of it. Also a nervous system relaxant as well. But for those things, obviously, let's give them smaller doses, because if the person's having an anxiety attack and then you make them puke, that doesn't really contribute to their thing. Yeah.
That also work for someone who's not having an asthma attack but is like just starting to problems with their asthma, like it's active.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you can take it quite regularly. You know, if you're like, I'm having a rough day, take a drop, take another drop, take a couple drops, it's okay. Another really handy use for this is for NicFits, right? So if somebody's giving up smoking, either because they choose to or because it's an emergency situation and suddenly they can't get 5 packs a day and they're having the shakes and everything else, lobelia has a component called lobeline that binds with your nicotine receptors. It's not habit forming. So this is a really good way to help people off of nicotine if they're choosing to get off of it, or if they're in a situation where they don't have that option anymore. Somebody, maybe a red hoodie, had a question. Yeah.
Can you buy that over the counter?
You can.
I mean, is there a reliable?
Yes, you can get it at Whole Foods.
Oh.
Herb Farm sells it, and it's very widely available. Yeah.
Any co-op, anywhere else, you know, that carries tinctures, they should have this one around.
This is also pine resin salve that my daughter climbed up a pine tree with a couple of her friends, and they made it themselves. It's really good, so afterwards, if you want to take a look at it, you're welcome to do. Okay, so the two things that I can't live without are that salve and the propolis spray. But, you know, you should have, yes?
Lobelia, can you use that regularly?
Yes.
Yes. Low dose, regularly. Build up.
At least for 12 years. I'll let you know.
Totally.
Yes.
Okay. How about if you come to someone with a bee sting and they don't have an EpiPen, but they're looking like they're swelling?
I would absolutely use it.
If the throat was closing off, I would give it a try. Yeah.
Internally or on the bee sting?
Both.
Internally.
Yeah. For the throat, always internal. But yeah, you can't hurt anybody by putting it on. It might sting if there's an open, because of the alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but a salve at any rate. You you need to carry a salve. And you want it to be, and again, the reason that we like this salve that is calendula, pansene, and pine resin is with that we get antiseptic. You don't have to write all this down because it's on the paper. Yeah. Antiseptic, vulnerary, that means it causes cells to heal over. Antifungal, lymphatic, right? We're getting all those actions. So you can use it for wounds, burns, cuts, abrasions, chilblains, right? Wow. This is a thing that if you're going to do homeless work in Boston, you are going to see it.
See what? I'm sorry.
Chilblains? So infections on the skin because of cold exposure.
Yeah, it's really bad in the wintertime here.
And even fungal infections, you can put that at the base of the nose for a respiratory infection because they're going to be smelling in the pine resin. And when you smell it, it's very piney, right? And pine, that volatile oil for pine is great for respiratory infection. So you can just put it right here, and probably their nose is all raw anyway, so they'll feel happy about that. But put it right here, and every time that they breathe, they're breathing in the pine volatile oils that is helping as an antimicrobial agent for their respiratory infection. So the most bang that we can get for the buck here. Okay, so then having a couple of powders can be very handy. And of the powders, the first one I would say is cinnamon. Cinnamon is useful for dysentery, right? Even to fairly strong diarrhea and fairly strong, repetitive diarrhea. And in this case, we want to get it into them as a powder because the cinnamon is going to soak up the water. So we would like ideally to have enteric-coated capsules for that so that we can get the cinnamon to still be a dry powder into the guts if you have that option. If you're in a place where you don't have encapsulation, you've run out of your capsules and all you have is the powder, fine, drink it with a lot of water on a spoon, don't do the YouTube version. Yeah.
I mean, you probably wouldn't have this unless you're carrying it, but you can also use thin sheets of rice paper. You can get them at Asian grocery stores and fold it up.
Yeah.
It
would get it further down. Yeah, absolutely.
And it would probably be easier to do in the field than trying to
encapsulate
something.
Yes.
Yes. Sure.
I would agree with that. Cinnamon is very good for blood sugar regulation. And if you're in a situation where you've got some type 2 diabetics and you don't have access to any pharmaceuticals, obviously, I'm not in any way suggesting that you pull people off their meds. But if they've been pulled off their meds involuntarily due to a disaster and there are no meds available, then it's really, really good to know that they actually, in Pakistan, I believe, they did a really good study where they used 2 teaspoons of cinnamon daily for type 2 diabetics who had previously been on metformin. Now, these were doctors running the study. They were doing it ethically, and they were monitoring them and all the good stuff. And they were able to control the type 2 diabetes by using the cinnamon. It was 2 teaspoons a day. Right? So having that around, obviously we would prefer that somebody takes the meds that they need to take to keep them alive. If those meds are not available, then in this case the cinnamon is very useful there. Cinnamon is also antispasmodic, so it's going to be very useful for anything from the hiccups to if you didn't have anything else, you could take some lobelia tincture and some cinnamon powder and make a paste and rub it right on their skin if you didn't have another option and you needed to deal with a strong muscle spasm maybe in the back. Antifungal, right? Powdered cinnamon for trench foot, for any kind of fungal whatever. If you have the luxury, then macerate the cinnamon in apple cider vinegar. But if we're talking about carrying the least amount of weight possible, having that powdered cinnamon, putting it in their socks, putting it all over their feet, it will be awkward, obviously, to get something on their feet and then get socks over it. But if you've got clean, dry socks and you've got powdered cinnamon, that will go a long, long way to helping somebody who's in the discomfort of that.
Should it be mixed with baby powder or something else, or is this cinnamon by itself?
No, cinnamon by itself. Cinnamon is warming for a respiratory infection, and also you could add it to other things that maybe the person doesn't really want to taste because of the flavor to help them get that down. And it's mucilaginous. So if somebody has had a lot of diarrhea and now the diarrhea has stopped but the guts are inflamed, you can put cinnamon powder in a cup of water, leave it set for a few hours, and it will get glocky. It'll get snotty. And drink that down. Also going to be useful for heartburn if you didn't have anything else. The cinnamon will be warming, and they may not want that feeling. But the mucilaginous effect will be useful. I would prefer to use one of the plants that we're going to talk about next, which is cayenne. No. We are going to talk about cayenne next, but the other one is coming. It's marshmallow. So cayenne, never leave home without it. Cayenne is a vital force stimulant, right? Cayenne is like your portable defibrillator that you don't need a license to use. You absolutely can stop a heart attack with cayenne, right? It may not work 100% of the time, but it has worked enough times that I'm like, dang, let's try that. Now, if you have 911 available and someone is having a heart attack, please call 911. Don't be like, here's some cayenne, you'll be fine. No, please call 911. But give them the cayenne because you can't hurt them with it. And when the paramedics show up and there's no heart attack going on and they're like, where's the problem? And the guy's like, oh, well, it was me. I was having a heart attack. And they say, well, what happened here? Oh, we used cayenne. Yeah, sure, you did, whatever. Actually, no, you may get recognition for that because it is becoming known enough. And also I would use cayenne even if it looks like there isn't any hope left. Even if it looks like the guy is dying from his heart attack or her heart attack, I would still administer cayenne because, hey, they're going to die anyway, right? Try it.
How would you administer it in general?
Yes, a big old spoonful right in the mouth. Yes. Yes, and we have had people, so Doc Garcia was just talking about this, either it was last weekend or the weekend before, about doing this, and the guy, they thought he was dead, and he's like, well, whatever. He took some Tabasco sauce, poured a whole ton of it in the guy's mouth, and the guy sat up and punched him in the face. Right?
That's awesome.
That's awesome. So there's nothing to lose. You can't hurt somebody with Tabasco sauce. The guy was dead on the ground anyway. So try it. Please do call 911 if that is available to you. But if it's not available, or if it is and you don't, and you're just sitting around waiting for them to get there, use your cayenne.
Is that one of those things, it has to be a spoonful? Like, can you put it in the capsules? Or
it does. It has to be in the mouth. No capsules. Yes.
The alternative to powder is a tincture of cayenne.
And that's even more fun.
If anybody's feeling brave, you're welcome to try a drop of this. Anybody want me to pass this over?
So actually, a tincture of cayenne is very, very useful. Because caffeine, if you use that as a practitioner to keep you awake in an emergency situation, you will get the jitters. Or at least I will get the jitters. You may also have that experience. Cayenne doesn't do that to me. There's no caffeine in cayenne. But let me tell you, and let all these other people tell you, that when you have a drop of that, you feel awake really fast. It will wake you right up. And so I would rather be taking drops of cayenne every half an hour as needed to help myself stay up and going through an emergency situation than to use caffeine. Yeah.
Can you just example how you bring
Oh, yeah. It's just a dropper bottle with no dropper in it. Cayenne is also styptic. In general, we don't want to put powder in a wound. You will hear lots of people teach, oh, just throw some powder on it. It'll stop bleeding. If you have the option, it would be better not to do that because now, great, you stop the bleeding, but you have all that powder you're going to have to clean out. However, if you have no other option, then do it. Throw the cayenne powder in there. It will stop the bleeding, and it will do it very fast. You'll deal with the cleaning out the powder later. It won't be super fun. It'll be fine. What else? Oh, cayenne is also very excellent for arthritic pain, which is going to work exactly the same as capsaicin cream does. It works exactly the same because guess what they put in capsaicin cream? They put cayenne pepper, right? So you can use cayenne tincture or cayenne powder rubbed right on the joints of somebody with arthritic pain. And yes, it is going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be hot and burny, but it will manage the arthritic pain for a considerable amount of time afterwards, possibly as much as a week. So So that's very, very useful, depending on the person.
Well, is it fibro or is it not for nerve pain?
You wouldn't want to use this for hot nerve pain.
Oh.
Right? If you're already dealing with hot nerve pain, then you don't want to put more hot on top of it. But in this case, with arthritis, we're talking about cold joint pain. And so we're warming it up and we're bringing blood to the area, and that's going to help deal with the pain.
So do you like put it in oil or something, or you just put the powder?
If I'm at home and I have all my everything available, then I would, it's hard to get cayenne to come out in oil. So I would use tincture mixed into a salve. So that we're not going to like burn the skin. We have some oil to protect it, but we have the strength of the cayenne in the tincture. But if you're out and all you have is powder, get it a little bit wet, rub that powder right in.
Okay.
Okay. And then activated charcoal is the other powder that we would carry. You guys, I hate activated charcoal. It turns everything black. I'm such a priss. I do prefer this. Activated charcoal turns everything black. I mean everything black, and you will never get it out. But that's better than having a nasty, terrible staph infection that kills you, right? So activated charcoal does draw infection. It draws venom. It will bind to contaminants if the person has been poisoned. And it's really good for intense dysentery. I have not yet come across a situation that I couldn't get by with just clay or some other herb. So I really prefer to carry bentonite clay, but you carry activated charcoal. And there are some times when it is what you need. So it is useful to have some available. But just know, keep it contained. It will stain everything.
It's pretty awesome, though. I mean, I saw there was a girl with a big spider bite, and it was, like, you know, big and round and swollen, and there was, like, a little volcano, not a volcano, but a raised area in the center, and it was, like, oozing and stuff. We put activated charcoal on there for a while. We gave her some immunostimulants. And in a few days, it receded by, like, I don't know, 50% or more. So it can be really very helpful. Yeah. And don't underestimate it for those topical things.
Yeah.
Do you use bentonite for venom?
If not, if it was snake. If it was snake, it would need to be activated charcoal. But for bee stings, any of that kind of stuff, yes. And I like bentonite clay also for poisoning. But again, at a certain level, it's got to be activated charcoal. So this would be like food poisoning. You know, like,
but you can
not
activated charcoal for good poisoning.
Yeah, you could. But if it wasn't too bad, I would use the clay instead, because it's not as gross.
Yeah.
Also, it's more pleasant to swallow mud than it is to swallow activated charcoal. So
it's always internal, it's not on?
Oh, no, you can use it externally as well. Make a nice paste out of it. Yep. Use it for any kind of a bee sting or any other kind of bite that's getting really big and scary. Yes.
Yeah.
And those would act as a mimetic, right? They make them throw up?
Nope, they bind to the stuff and carry it out of the body. Again, it's a binding thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you
prepare
it? Oh. Just put some in your mouth and chug it.
Yeah, a couple of tablespoons, stir it into some water, make a slurry, and slosh it back. The thing with charcoal is that it doesn't bind to polar substances, and the polar substance you're going to encounter is water, right? So the idea is you mix it into the water, but it doesn't like, the charcoal particles don't get stuck to the water. They come into your body and they bind to whatever was in there. So you didn't want to take this with your nourishing food, because now you don't get any of that, right? But if you ate some poisonous food or whatever, then it will grab onto that and carry it out. Your poop will turn black. You're probably not bleeding to death. You know, we should make sure of that first, but just warn people about it, because they'll see their black poop and be like, ah, what happened? Right, so.
Everything black.
Yeah.
Okay, so then there are two dry herbs that I would carry. Right? No others. Because you don't probably have the ability to make tea. If you're in an encampment and you can make tea, that's great. If you're in a community health tent and you can make tea, yes, that's fantastic. Tea is my favorite way to get plants into people. But there are two herbs that you can carry that you don't need a tea kettle to use, and that's linden and marshmallow. Right? You can make both of those in cold water. So linden, both of these for dehydration, linden for nervous exhaustion, panic attack, PTSD, anxiety, any of that kind of stuff. Also for fibro pain, any kind of hot nervous pain, like my like any kind of feeling burning, but there isn't really a burn, you know, that kind of stuff. Lyndon, also for angina. Or palpitations for fever, and topically for sunburn, and as an eye wash. And you never need hot water. You just put it right in cold water. If you're gonna use it as an eye wash, strain it good, and then strain it good again. Don't get little particles in there. That would be a bummer. And marshmallow, also for dehydration, but this is where you're gonna get all your GI distress, soothing. This is best for heartburn, right? Lyndon will also do the heartburn trick, but marshmallow is stronger in that regard. Ulcers, topical or internal, anywhere. Ulcers. Marshmallow has a nice kidney action.
It's a mild diuretic.
And topically, even as a vulnerary. Not as strong as plantain and calendula, but absolutely useful.
Particularly good for burns there, because that's already a hot tissue state, right? You've got a lot of heat in that area, so you want to cool that off. And marshmallow works very well for that, while also encouraging regeneration of new cells.
So you're talking about mixing cold water, you put the dry herb, doesn't have to be that herb?
No, this I would just carry the herb itself.
How long do you want it to steep?
A couple hours.
Yeah, the longer it steeps, the more thick and viscous the liquid will get.
Okay.
It's going to be more effective. But you know, for like if it's a topical preparation, you can just take the herb and get it good and kind of soaked, but not floating in liquid. So it'll just soak all that up and absorb it, and now you've got a poultice to work with. Put that right onto the area. You know, again, not with like big open wounds and stuff, but something that is closed or is in a later stage of healing, you can just put it right on, wrap it with your handkerchief, and put it in place. You're all set.
And what do you bring to strain?
Cloth. Yeah, I don't carry any kind of extra straining.
Yeah.
It's just stuff in my bag that I don't need.
Gauze works as well as cheesecloth.
Bandana. Yep. And in terms of how to carry it, so we're in the process right now, as you see, we carry all glass right now, because I've been having real qualms about plastic and not being comfortable with putting stuff in plastic. And I have recently been made comfortable with HDPE plastic. HPDE?
HDPE.
Yeah, okay. So Ed Smith, who runs Herb Farm, wrote me a very nice dissertation about his experimentation with alcohol in HDPE plastic, and that he is comfortable with it not leaching into the alcohol. So we are going to transition to this type of bottle, because you have a dropper top. Right? You can still get stuff out. It's not quite so precise, but it's precise enough. And they also make a wide mouth version. So this is what I would use for dry herbs as well.
With a broad mouth.
Yeah. You could use a Ziploc, but that becomes obnoxious after a while. Okay, so that's it for dry herbs. So now we have salve, we have powders, we have dry herbs. We need a wound wash, right? So the wound wash that I love best is based on rose. And what I like best to do is take some rose water from the grocery store for $3 a bottle, right? And then I get some Thayer's Rose Witch Hazel, which is alcohol-free. And I put those two, I mix equal parts of those together in a bottle, in a sports spray bottle, and I usually will put one part clean water as well. Not tap water, if I can avoid that. So one part just water, one part rose water, one part Thayer's Witch Hazel. They have various different types. I like the rose kind. Rose is fantastic for disinfecting. Put that in a squirt top bottle, you're ready to go. Not only that, but that's great for a sunburn, right? I don't want anything in my kit that has only one use. I love lots and lots and lots of plants, but we're carrying all this on our back. I don't want to have something that I can only use once. So you wouldn't want to use the witch hazel internally, but fantastic for a sunburn. However, the rose water, very good as an antidepressant, especially for people who are feeling exposed or feeling unsafe, right? Rose is really good for that. And if you think about the way that rose grows, it's like it's like a barbed wire fence for bunnies. like no hawks can get through it. Like all the bunnies can run around in the like rounded rose bushes, and if you look, they all hump over like this, and you'll see little tracks of small mammals who scurry around in there, because larger mammals and hawks can't get in to eat them. So if that's how you're feeling, right, like large animals and hawks are going to get you, rose is what you want. And if you are in a disaster situation or a situation of civil unrest, that's how a lot of people are feeling, right? So, excellent. Vinegar is really handy as a wash, but I don't usually carry it because I'm trying to carry as little as possible. At home I may use it, but not in the street, just because the rose water is gonna do the job. Also, vinegar will hurt a lot. Not as much as alcohol, but it will hurt a lot. However, if you're looking at something and you're like, that's really infected, I feel really scared, there's no one more qualified than me. If there's someone more qualified than you, ask them for help. But if there's not, that would be when I'd be like, I don't care if it hurts, you're getting all the vinegar right there on that, you know? That's when. And in that case, I would have put stuff in the vinegar, probably. I would use like a Four Thieves vinegar type thing. I wouldn't just carry plain vinegar. I would have a bunch of stuff in there. Because then also, it's also gonna be useful as a digestive, as a respiratory thing. You know, carry a little fire cider. It will disinfect stuff, I promise.
Yeah. How do you feel in general about hydrogen peroxide?
I do not use it for any purpose. Probably if I had to maybe bleach something, but even still not. I don't really want it in the water supply either. I don't use it for anything.
Do you have any familiarity with Clausen's liniment?
Yes. I'm not a super big fan. First off, I don't. It's almost always made with, it's a purple alcohol, and I never ever want to use that for any reason. And second is that I don't want to put alcohol on a wound if there's anything I can do to avoid it, because alcohol is going to slow the regrowth of cells, so it actually will slow down the healing. I would only use that if I had nothing else available for disinfection, and the disinfection needed something that strong. But if I was gonna do that, I would make it in vinegar, and then it would just be fire cider. But you can disinfect wounds without inflicting Clausen's liniment on people. That's just cruel, right? I mean, unless you really need that level of disinfectant, in which case I still would make it in vinegar instead of alcohol. Like, there's no reason to make that. People will scream if you put that on a big cut. It will hurt. Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't do that. Okay, so we got wound wash. I carry one essential oil. It's lavender. Lavender can be used as a wound wash if you run out of your rose water stuff. You can fill your bottle up with water again, put in a few drops of lavender, some number of drops of lavender essential oil, and use that as a wound wash. So instead of having to carry lots of bottles of rose water to keep refilling your squirt bottle, you just have one tiny little bottle of lavender essential oil. And you can just keep refilling that with water and adding drops in. Lavender is amazing for burns. Remember I said that the only thing we put on that burn was lavender honey and that salve. So I carry around honey in a yeast vial. So this was like, we brew mead, and we got yeast for brewing mead in this vial. And I was like, hey, I know what I can do with that. So I carry it full of raw local honey. And we just pulled a bunch out. I didn't even have a dish available at that time, like something to put it on, so I just put it in the lid and mixed in some lavender essential oil and slathered it all over her burn. In that particular case, I do use a lot of essential oil. I think in a lid full of honey, I'm pretty sure we had 6 or 10 drops of essential oil. I would not normally use that much, but it was a very severe burn. So lavender essential oil also as a muscle relaxant, right? Now we have a few other things in the kit that will do that, but I don't mind having some redundancy. I just don't want to carry anything that has only one use, right? Carry everything that has multiple uses. Because what if I run out of something, right? Okay, well now I can use this for that as well. Very good for sunburn. Again, you can just drop it into some salve, or you can put it in water and put the water on. Really, really excellent. And sunburn is something you're going to deal with a lot. I mean, it just, it happens. And although I would always prefer to drink clean water, if you need emergency water treatment, you could use it that way. This would not be my first choice, but if this is the option you have available, then this is the one, this is one I would take.
Wait, sorry, what is the this?
Water treatment?
Lavender.
Oh, lavender essential oil, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A few drops in the bottle, shake it real good, wait, shake a few more, wait a while. Okay, and then drink some.
About an hour between both the shakes, or how long does it need?
So it would depend on how badly I need the water.
What would be, I don't know if you're in front of
this
after,
but
what would be your first choice for water?
A ceramic pump.
A what?
A ceramic pump. I particularly like the one I have from MSR. It's a Katahdin.
Yeah.
That would be my first choice.
But, you know, if you're, especially for a long-term thing, then having fire and water and shelter, these are going to be your primary concerns. You're going to need to have that stuff set up and really consistently accessible before you're going to be able to really work with people in a first aid manner. I mean, you can do stuff, but you got to have access to that. So somebody needs to be taking charge of those goals.
Herbally, other things that I would use if I had to would be gold thread or any of the other berberine plants.
Barberry.
And any of the very strong mints like oregano. Yeah, I'd probably prefer sage and stuff over peppermint if I had the option.
And that's also for last recourse water.
Water treatment, yeah, yeah. But I would prefer lots of things before that.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we're going to carry, how much time do we have? We're getting very close. We're going to do this super fast. We're going to carry a small number of tinctures. And I carry these as simples, because I want to be able to blend them as I need to or not blend them at all. So lobelia we already talked about. I don't leave home without it. It is very first on the list. The next, and these are now not really in any particular order, barberry. Barberry is our local berberine plant. So this is going to be good as an antiseptic. Also in low doses as a mucous membrane tonic, just think golden seal. Right? Yeah. It's going to be good for dysentery and oral abscess or any kind of oral care. So that's another factor that really needs to be on your mind, especially in a long-term situation, and especially with people who don't have access to great sanitation, is mouth care. Right? Clay can also be used for that, the bentonite clay. Activated charcoal can too, but then their teeth will be black.
I'm going to pass some tinctures around. Feel free to take a drop or not. You know, if you don't have good aim, then just drop it on your hand and lick it off. But just so you can get a sense of the taste of some of these plants if they're unfamiliar, I would say, though, don't carry plants that you're not familiar with, right? You should know what a good berberine tincture tastes like. You should know what a powerful cayenne tincture tastes like, right? And that way you're going to be able to identify whether your medicine is going to be effective. So be really sensually familiar with the plants that you carry around for you when you're trying to help somebody in a stressful situation. It'll help you too.
I want to try the lobelia.
Okay, so the next one I would carry is Tulsi. Also known as holy basil, sacred basil, all those things. Tulsi is my favorite for anxiety and panic and trauma and PTSD. Even if this is triggered PTSD from a previous event, that now you're in a bad situation and that's coming back up again, Tulsi will not let you down. It's amazing stuff. Also, handy for a respiratory infection. Really good at blood sugar regulation. I would go with cinnamon first, and the reason on that is only because we have a study that gives us dosing information, and it's been done, and it's been charted, and we can really rely on that. But Tulsi is very effective at blood sugar regulation. The little caveat there is if you have someone with low blood sugar, maybe you wouldn't want to give it to them, but you don't have somebody with low blood sugar because that never happens anymore, right? We all have too many Twinkies. Nobody has low blood sugar.
I have hypoglycemia, so my fiber.
So, also fever. And Tulsi is very good for PMS mood things, right? So if you are PMSing and feeling grumpy about it, this isn't going to do anything for the cramps, but it will stop the raving psycho bitch. Very good. The next one is woodbetony. And so between Tulsi and woodbetony, I think it's empty. Between Tulsi and woodbetony, we also have stuff that we can use to help people who are coming off of bad trips. I don't know a better way to say that, right? I would use Tulsi in a situation where we're working with somebody who's non-responsive. They're breathing and they're whatever, but they won't talk. And woodbetony for somebody who is maybe on the aggressive side or like sort of aggressively having a bad trip to bring them down. But the person who has a great deal of experience with this is Sean Donahue, and he has written some really beautiful and extremely useful stuff. So I highly recommend an article that he wrote called Healing Through the Veil, which is specifically written over his years of experience of working at music festivals in the first aid tent and dealing with lots of people taking lots of drugs.
Yeah,
very, very good.
That's the place where these are going to be most relevant. His name is Sean Donahue. And I had done some work with him like that, and those are, so there's a couple of others that are also quite important. They can make a very immediate impact in somebody's experience, so you need to be aware of that, and it can be very helpful.
But Bentney is not just for that. Bentney is fantastic for headache, especially concussion. I don't know another plant that works for concussion like betony does. Don't leave home without it. Amazing stuff. Depression, especially depression with ungroundedness. I might use Tulsi for depression with a giant ball and chain, right? Like the kind of depression that's pinning you to the ground. Depression that is very ungrounded and you're just sort of floating and feeling like whatever, that would be with betony. And so what we're talking about here is that woodbetony is going to bring you down in a good, grounded kind of way until seed brings you up, right? So that's how I'm going with these. Like, if I give you that overview, then you can kind of make those decisions yourself. Woodbetony is very good for PTSD and especially for dissociative disorders. Whether it is happening in that moment, there's dissociation going on right now because something just happened and I'm out of here mentally or emotionally. Or if it's somebody who has had an dissociative disorder for a long time and now finds themselves in a traumatic situation. Either one. Brain fog. Woodbetony is also really useful for digestive distress. Not as strong as some of our specifics for that. But again, I want to know every possible way I can use these plants so that I've got the widest array of stuff I can do with my kit.
I know it depends on the person, but do you have like a standard first dose?
A squirt.
Yeah. So like eight drops of woodbetony.
Yeah.
Cool.
That would be. I'm not super picky about. As some people are very picky about drops and exact doses. I don't typically work with plants that are so strong that you have to do that with. So I usually just sort of think in terms of squirts.
Yep.
And if it's somebody his size, I'll do a squirt. If it's somebody my size, I'll do three. I sort of leave it at that. You never really know if the person that you're working with is a tank or if they're twitchy. And you can ask them if you're able to ask them. You might not be able to ask them. They might not be able to respond to that. Obviously, as I say that, don't ever give somebody something without consent unless it's a life or death situation. But, okay, yes.
For the tinctures, are they alcohol-based?
Yes. And that is a limitation.
Okay.
Vinegar. Okay. We don't carry vinegar tinctures typically because I like to set my kit and have it ready. If I were going someplace specifically where I knew alcohol was an issue, then I would carry vinegar tinctures. But they're short-lived. They have a short lifespan.
We do prefer them over glycerins, though.
Over what?
Over glycerins.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of glycerins. I like syrups with honey, And Oxymel, but I don't know. Just with vinegar and set it off on that. Yep. Okay, a couple more, actually four. And I'll do these really fast because it is all on the sheet, so don't worry, you have this information. Yarrow, which is useful for all the things. There's nothing that yarrow can't do. Ginger, which your number one thing there is the anti-emetic to prevent nausea, but also this is your PMS cramps. This is, there's so much you can do with ginger. It's anti-inflammatory. Icaricuva ursi, which is a very strong astringent. So here's your urinary tract infection. Here is also, you could use this for dysentery. You can use it any place where you need an astringent, even gum care, right? For somebody who maybe has an abscess or something going on, even in the mouth, absolutely. And Solomon's seal, because Solomon's seal is the only plant I know that is so good for joints, right? There's just nothing that is as good as Solomon's seal for a turned ankle, a sprained wrist, any of that kind of stuff.
Would you apply that topically or?
Both.
Yes.
Yep. And there are some other uses of those that are written in the handout, so all you have to do is just take a look there. But I do want to talk about law because somebody asked and because it's really useful. So in the handout, the exact ingredients that you need are listed. So you don't need to scramble to write this down. But law is liquid antacid and water. This is the antidote to tear gas and pepper spray. And that's very handy. So what you do is you get yourself a spray bottle, a clean spray bottle, and you put in half water. You cannot mix this ahead of time. I mean, you can mix it the morning of, but you can't mix it and then a month later use it. So you'll put half of that spray bottle full of water, the other half full of a liquid antacid. There are specific ingredients that you want and that you don't want. You want the aluminum hydroxide and the magnesium hydroxide. You do not want peroxide, alcohol, or potassium because that will hurt, right? That is listed here, so you don't have to write that down. You spray it directly on the person's eyes. At first, they probably can't open their eyes at all. So you just spray it on the eye and tell them to blink. And some of it will start to seep into the eye. Spray it gently. And then you may need to do that three or four times and have them keep blinking. And when they can hold their eye open, spray it gently, even directly on the open eye. They'll probably close it, just because we do by reflex. But what we're trying to do is get as much of it into the eye as possible, because that counteracts the effects of the tear gas and the pepper spray. This can be used on any mucous membrane or even directly on the skin, because pepper spray also hurts on your skin.
And in your nose and in your lungs and all in there.
It's worth educating yourself about how to deal with tear gas and pepper spray, how to manage clothes that have been soaked in it, everything else. And it's also worth knowing that tear gas is not permitted for military use. Right? It is banned as a chemical weapon for use by militaries, but the police can use it on the population. Right? So that's worth knowing. And then the last thing here on this list is a container of honey, right? Because you can put that on anything. It is extremely antiseptic. If you're afraid, you've cleaned it out, but you're afraid that, oh my goodness, I don't think I could have cleaned this well enough. I'm still worried that there could be infection in there. Slather it with honey. Just cover it in honey. Because it will kill all of the stuff that's in there. It is hydrophilic, which means that it's trying to soak up the water, so it actually, like, just imagine a little bacteria or whatever, that bacteria is just a dried up shriveled husk of itself and it's not able to hurt anybody.
So if you were to use something like a yarrow tincture on a really deep cut or something like that, would you do that before honey, or would you do honey, like, what kind of water?
Yes, so if I had to use tincture, first I would rinse it out with water. Then I would rinse it out with the tincture.
Okay.
Then I would rinse it out with water again. I would feel sad about using the tincture because it is going to hurt a lot. But if I felt that I really had to, I would. But I would rinse it out with water again. Yeah, like let it sit there for a couple of minutes, hold their hand, apologize a lot. And then, you know, after it's been a few minutes and you feel like, all right, we've killed all the things, rinse it out with water again. That's when I would put the honey on. I wouldn't leave the alcohol in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
suggest bringing with you to do like a spoonful of cinnamon powder or slathering honey?
I use my hands.
Just use your gloved hands.
My gloved hands. Yep. And you could use the lid of the thing that you have the powder in as a measuring unit. And to pour it into whatever you're going to use there. But worst case, I would tell somebody, and I would pour it in. And then pour in water right away. Don't try to swallow a big glob of powder. But if that's all I had, and I don't carry like spoons and this and that, because it's just stuff, yeah, it's just stuff in the kit that's going to get me distracted from what. So I would rather just use my gloved hand or the lid that doesn't touch their body or whatever else. Okay, so I know that was a whirlwind, you guys. I hope that it at least gets you started. The handout is just a nice big list of what to put in your kit. Give us a holler. We will be teaching first aid classes more and more. We haven't done a round of them in a while, so we will do a nice big round of them on Wednesday nights. Every Wednesday night we have classes available from 7 to 9 that are drop-in and open to the public. If you're interested in Wilderness First Aid certification, a Wilderness First Responder certification, which is longer than Wilderness First Aid, then let me know. We do have 3 spots open. And if you need more resources for longer trainings, then just feel free to email us. And I'm pretty sure it wouldn't take much arm twisting for a weekend workshop. Same.
This concludes the class. For more information about the Commonwealth Center for Holistic Herbalism, visit our website at commonwealthherbs.com.